Hey, what's up, everybody? My name's MJ, and you're listening to the MTG in Quarantine podcast. As usual, I'd like to give a quick shout-out before we begin to my local game store, Guardian Games. You can find Guardian Games on the web at ggportland.com. I'd also like to utilize this opportunity to give a huge shout-out and thank you to all the awesome people who supported me over at patreon.com/MTGInQuarantine. So a huge thanks to Mr. Big Benz, Anomaly, Draco Lucian, Neo Royal, Nick S, Infamous Fridge, Frugal Brutal, and Jen of the Filthy MTG Casuals for supporting the show. If you'd like to help support the show and help me make more awesome content, head on over to patreon.com/MTGInQuarantine for more information. On today's episode of the podcast, we're going to be talking about the personalization of CEDH as well as the motivations for playing CEDH. I've got a great guest on here, so without further ado, I'd like to introduce today's guest, Jim LaPage from the Spike Feeders. Welcome to the show.
Hey, MJ. Thanks for having me.
Hey, it's great to have you. I mean, I feel like this episode's been a long time coming here, so it's great to finally be able to have you on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, my schedule's been packed lately. But no, I love doing this stuff. So yeah, let's do it.
Awesome. So before we begin, though, Jim, would you like to give a quick shout out for the work you do over at the Spike Feeders?
Yeah, well, I run two YouTube channels on the Spike Feeders. One of them is for Magic and the other one is for Flesh and Blood. And we do kind of a smattering of a bunch of stuff. We do mostly gameplay, but we also on the Magic channel do combo breakdown videos where we talk about how to play against combo and how to execute combos. We talk a lot about the philosophy of the format, of the format of Commander, of course. And on the Flesh and Blood side of things, we just do gameplay, but we're starting to branch out into a couple other things over there as well. I'm also a member of the Commander Advisory Group, which is the advisory group to the Rules Committee. And we give them our thoughts on all sorts of stuff that's going on in the world of Commander.
Awesome, awesome. Yeah, y'all do great work doing the Commander Advisory Group. It's definitely appreciated from at least this corner of the internet where I hang out. So
yeah, well, it's quite a lot, but you know, it's fun. I like doing that stuff. So
awesome, awesome. Yeah, so again, just as I mentioned a moment ago here, Jim, we at the outset of the show here, before the show, we figured that we were going to talk about personalization of CEDH, or, you know, if we want to put it another way, how to basically personalize your experience or your motivations to play CEDH. Now, the listeners out there who've been listening for a significant amount of time have obviously probably gotten sick of me talking about CEDH in my own homebrew at this point, so I'm really not going to hit home on that. But I guess the first real question here is, when you mention personalization of CEDH, what exactly and how exactly do you define that?
Well, you know, it's an interesting question. It's something that I've been thinking about a lot lately. And, you know, if you follow me on Twitter, I've been talking about it fairly publicly as well. Essentially, I see a lot of people talk about CEDH in terms of strictly optimizing to win, as though that's the primary or the only motivation for playing Commander this way. So, you know, as a pure test of skill in deck building or pure test of skill in gameplay. And although I think that there's like elements of that, I think that there's actually quite a few other motivations at play as well, just from what I've observed. I don't exclusively play CEDH when I play Commander. I play all over the format. I really like exploring and getting new and novel experiences. That's my primary motivation. And it's one of the reasons why I play CEDH as well, because it's just one of the different ways that you can experience the format. But with CEDH, I find that a lot of people are drawn to the format because it's one of the only places where you can do certain things. And a lot of those things are distinctively Commander experiences. There's stuff that you can't do in Vintage. There's stuff that you can't do in Legacy. A lot of it has to do with multiplayer dynamics and the sociality of the game. And even just the limitations in deck building. But first of all, the limitations of being a singleton 100 card format, as well as the consistency of always having access to one or two cards in the command zone. It's just like a different puzzle to solve in the world of Magic. So, like, really when I talk about personalization, it's more along the lines of, like, I think that there's a really broad spectrum of reasons why we're drawn to this style of play. And I don't see people talk about them very frequently because it's really, really easy to say, I play to win. That's my only motivation. I play to win. It's very, like, it's easy. It sounds good. It's snappy. I'm just not convinced that it's accurate.
For sure, for sure. And you definitely got me thinking there as well, because every time I'm trying to define CDH, and obviously I'm a newer player, I'm just wading into this, I see it from one perspective. You've been playing this a lot longer. You've obviously had been around a lot more games, around a lot more brewers, people who talk about this. So you've had that time to really develop that opinion. And it's interesting just to hear you mention that, because again, since I'm first getting into CDH, and I know this isn't true because of all the amazing people I've worked with over the last few months here to really learn CDH, but when you're kind of new, you look at the deck database as kind of this monolith. And like, these are the quote unquote top tier decks. You know, you maybe change one or two cards here, but effectively these are the best decks to run. You probably should run them. And that's kind of the way it feels like sometimes when you're just first getting into the format, you're basically unsure where to start. And you just have this just laundry list of like, what was it, 50 decks or something, just staring you in the face. How am I ever going to choose this? And it's really when you start getting into that, when you start having those conversations, when you do start playing, that you start to realize, to your point here, Jim, that you start seeing some of those changes. It's not just about the number of cards that are different in there, but again, as you just said a moment ago, it's not just about playing to win. And obviously that is one of the reasons why we play CDH, because I like to think that most of us try to play to win most of the time. But it doesn't necessarily mean we're trying to go all out, even though we're technically in the side of this EDH format where we're most likely to be trying to win as quickly, as efficiently as possible. You don't necessarily have to do that. Games are going to play out somewhat differently. You're going to have your different strategies. And just your, again, like you said at the beginning of the show, different motivations for getting into this, just like more casual games of EDH. It's just I guess you're kind of coming at it from a different perspective, a different number of cards you're going to be using in the main pool anyway, something like that.
Yeah, it's kind of like, you know, if you're really into cars, right? One of the things that you can be interested in cars is cars that go really fast, but that's not the only thing, right? That's not the only thing that attracts people to getting into that hobby, right? Mm-hmm. It's similar with a lot of other things, right? Like, you know, if you're interested, like my partner's interested in gardening, right? And, you know, if she wanted to get really, 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 really into it, she could get into, you know, farming for subsistence and all that kind of stuff, like grow enough food to support us throughout the year. That is one way that you can enjoy that hobby. But you can also just garden because you like gardening. You could garden flowers. You can garden vegetables. It's about variety, right?
Mm-hmm.
And similarly with Magic, like one of the things that can attract you to CDH is going really fast. But one of the other things that can attract you to CDH is that you get to play a whole bunch of cards from the 90s that aren't legal in any other formats.
Oh, yeah.
Or maybe you like the challenge of having to interact with three opponents instead of one. Or maybe, you know, there's like a whole bunch of other things that are involved that aren't strictly the thrill of winning. Because I think, you know, if the thrill of winning were the only thing there, that people actually wouldn't be that attracted to CDH. Because, again, a 25% win rate is like pretty good, but it means that you're losing three games for every one that you win, right? So there's got to be something else there. That's what I think, at least. I know, you know, there might be some people out there that disagree with me, but I think that the decklist database in particular would look a lot different if people were only looking to play the first best strategies that are available in the format. Like, it's pretty obvious what decks are the best out there, right? Like, there's a short list of them, right? It's like, mm-hmm. Cody Turbo and Oz, maybe, you know, it's a lot of Ad Nauseam stuff, it's a lot of Thassa's Oracle stuff, it's a lot of Underworld Breach stuff, right?
I mean, Ryan from Playing with Power would definitely want you to put Goto on that list. I can guarantee you that. So we're just gonna put Goto there too.
Yeah, I mean, he's allowed to be wrong. So
come on, Jim, don't make me fight you on this one. Since I obviously, for the listeners out there, have started playing Goto and found it quite fun. So, yeah, I'm totally impartial on this one. But yes, continue.
Yeah, so I just think that the decklist database would look a lot different if it was only a list of like the best things that you could do. There's actually a pretty broad range of decks that are in the decklist database. And this is actually pretty evident when you look at the MLC draft that's coming up. Mm-hmm. Are you familiar with this at all?
Yeah, I've actually started to really look into that because obviously last year when it was occurring, I obviously didn't really understand too much about CDH, so I kind of let it go. But this year, I'm interested in at least kind of following along. I may not have a chance to watch most of the games, but I'll try to follow along. It seems like a very interesting concept, if nothing else.
It is. And actually, I think that it does a really good job. I'm playing in it, full disclosure. I'm playing in it
Cool.
this year. But I think that it actually does a really good job of kind of poking at the other motivations that people have for CDH, is that they don't just want to win. They want to win in a way that's interesting and meaningful for them. Like that is also there. And I think that that's really manifest in the decks that are selected. Like if you look at the decks that Callahan and Joking and Phoenix have put together for the MLC draft, there's a focus on variety. There's a focus on maybe pushing people a little bit outside of their comfort zones to see how they react. And I still think that that's a good measure of skill, because one of the ways that you can measure the skill of a player is by how well they pilot a deck that they just picked up that they're not familiar with, right? Like if you've ever played Magic against Gavin Verhey, he'll crush you with a deck that he's never seen before. He won't even riffle through it first. He'll just draw seven cards and start the game. He needs no information about this deck, but he's a former pro player, right? Like he's just really, really good at Magic. And so pushing people outside of their comfort zone is one of the ways that you can, kind of explore the format a little bit. And yeah, I just think that if you follow the MLC, it's a really good way to showcase some of the other reasons why people are attracted to kind of our corner of the.
Yeah, so for anyone who's really unfamiliar with what MLC stands for, could you give us a really 1 minute top-down view of exactly what it is and why this is in some ways a really revolutionary take on CDH in general?
Yeah, I think so. The MLC, first of all, stands for Major League Commander. And we'll get into kind of why it's significant in a sec, but I'll give you a quick rundown of the nuts and bolts of it. It's essentially patterned after a pro sports league. So rather than doing a tournament the way that you might be tempted to, like a Swiss tournament with X number of rounds based on the number of players with a cut to top eight or whatever at the end of it. And then people playing like quarterfinals, semifinals, finals. It's a little bit different. Players around the world are divided into conferences and divisions, like you would see in the NHL or the NBA or Major League Baseball. And they play games against other players in their division, other players outside of their division, and you end up with a record. So it's done over a couple months where players play either once a week or every other week. They rack up points for wins. They play a couple games at a time, and then the record is determined, is used to determine who makes the playoffs at the end of the season. So it's more like a sports league season than it is like a Swiss tournament.
Yeah,
And at the
definitely.
beginning, determining what players play, there's a draft. So there's a curated list of decks and archetypes at the beginning, and there's a draft just like there would be for the NBA. And you get to pick which decks that you get to play during the season.
Yeah, I've definitely seen a lot of chatter on Twitter the last couple of days and weeks about the draft. A lot of analyses, and a lot of Ken from Stacked EDH trying to sign a petition so he gets all the Kark decks. But again, I digress on that one.
Well, so Ken's motivations are actually, I think, a little more nuanced than a lot of people realize. When you see Ken's change.org petition to draft all of the Kark decks, a lot of people are tempted to say, well, Ken just wants to play all the Kark decks. And that's true. But I would also say that the primary reason for why the MLC exists is as an entertainment product. It's not necessarily a vehicle for directly measuring the skill of the people involved. It's more to create entertaining CDH gameplay content and commentary about gameplay content to get people excited about playing Magic. And that's the primary reason why, first of all, why I got invited, because I would definitely not represent myself as one of the most skilled Commander players in the world. I don't think that that's factually accurate. So, but also that's the reason why I even want to be involved in it, because tournament Magic doesn't really appeal to me. I don't really like the idea of you know, going into a tournament and saying, okay, well, the better player is going to end up on top, because that's not me. I'm not going to end up on top. But with the MLC as an entertainment product, I can get people excited about playing Commander, and I can get people excited about playing CDH. So I see a place for myself in something like this.
Yeah, it's a really interesting concept. I'm not sure if a lot of people know this about me, but I've been a big sports fan through my whole life. So seeing Magic brought into this sort of realm where it has a season format versus a Swiss format, it's actually really, really interesting. And I'll definitely have to keep a close eye on how things go throughout the season. Who knows? Maybe some year down the road, maybe I'll get an invite to this. But for now, I'll definitely keep an eye out on and just hopefully use that as a way to learn about some of the other decks that I've maybe seen the names of, or maybe y'all out there have seen the names of on the deck database, or you've heard bandy around on Twitter or a stream or whatnot, but you really don't know how the deck works, or you've just really never seen the deck, period. Or again, something like you've never seen it before. This is your chance to really see people try something new, kind of right out of the box in a way too.
Yeah, and the trying something new, I think, is a really important aspect. I've said this quite a lot in the past few years, but I do think that as a community, we can definitely be better at encouraging people to try new things. One of the things, this is not me talking, this is a quote from a guy named Ken Robinson, but if you're scared of being wrong, you'll never produce anything that's original but has value, is essentially his theory. And I think there's a lot of truth to that. If you're too scared of going outside the box, I know you mentioned that you've done an episode recently on brewing outside the meta, but if you're scared of doing that, you're never going to produce anything original. You know, you're just going to be repackaging the stuff that already works. And I mean, it works for a reason. There's a lot of things to be said about, you know, going with the tried and true things, especially when you're learning about the CEDH meta, but trying new things is really important too. And you know, we don't learn about what's good by doing the things we've always done. So I think that the MLC does a good job of that too. There's in the curated list of decks to draft from, there's some off meta stuff, let me tell you. And I'm so excited about it. Like there's a Greasefang Vehicles deck in there. And
what?
Like, I might try for it in the first round. I'm very excited about this deck.
Wow, that really is going off in the left field. But again, a lot of those new Kamigawa cards are really, really busted in their own way. So I can definitely see it too.
Yeah, Greasefang, for your listeners, by the way, is a 4/3 legendary creature rat pilot for 1WB that says, at the beginning of combat on your turn, return target vehicle from your graveyard to the battlefield. It gains haste. Return it to its owner's hand at the beginning of your next end step. So the cool thing that you can do with this is you can entomb Parhelion 2 and reanimate that on turn 3. Mm-hmm. And Parhelion 2, big beefy vehicle. It's an 8-mana 5/5. It's got Flying First Strike, Vigilance, Crew 4. And whenever it attacks, you create 2/4/4 white angel creature tokens with Flying and Vigilance that are attacking. Oh, it has so many words on it.
Wow.
I'm excited about that. Just pitch that to the graveyard, reanimate it with Greasefang, and get in with angels.
Mm-hmm. Wow, yeah, it definitely sounds like a nice little off-meta beats deck right there. yeah, it sounds fun, actually.
Yeah, I'm like really excited about it. Maybe I don't want to say this too loud, but just in case anybody else that's in the MLC is listening, don't draft it in the first round, because I really want this deck.
You've heard it here, folks. Jim has given us some of his super secret draft tech, so don't tell anyone out there.
Yeah, keep that under your hat.
Yeah. And yeah, it's interesting, again, this list. I haven't seen the full list, but in the decks that I have seen, there's, and I did a whole episode about archetypes here, and it's interesting to see that you have, again, pretty much all the archetypes listed here. You have your Nahz decks, you have your mid-range decks, your combat beats decks, your stacks decks, and then just like even Greasefang, which I'm not really sure if that necessarily falls under combat, but just like it's off the wall. It just feels like it's a very nice list of, again, just different sorts of decks to see a bunch of different gameplay, and at least from last year's experience, I heard that a lot of players like to go for 2, 3, maybe even 4, if you end up with the fourth pick, I guess, different decks to that you draft to make sure that you have different strategies to play out throughout the season.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, it's kind of interesting. Like, I am definitely not the most experienced CDH player. I'm probably going to look to lock down a couple strategies that are familiar to me. And then I might pick a couple that I've never seen before. Like this Grease Fang, it's not way out of my comfort zone, but I've never played it before. So it's going to be interesting if I end up with it. But I'll probably end up landing on something like, I don't know. I've seen this like Minsk deck,
Floating Minsk around.
It's a Minsk Hulk. It's like real nice. Minsk, is a, let me pull it up here.
Yeah. I've actually had the opportunity to play against this deck. It can actually do some interesting work.
Real cool. There's a lot that you can do with it. It's a 3/3 for red, green, white. It's a human ranger. And it says, when Minsk Beloved Ranger enters the battlefield, create Boo, a legendary 1/1 red hamster creature token with trample and haste. Then it has an activated ability that costs X generic mana or X colorless mana. Until the end of turn, target creature you control has base power and toughness XX and becomes a giant in addition to its other types, activated only as a sorcery. So the cool part about that is you can use it as a sacrifice outlet, as people often do, kind of like Mirror Entity.
Mm-hmm.
By activating it for X equals 0 and turning something into a 0/0. So you use it to sacrifice Academy Rector to get Pattern of Rebirth, Pattern of Rebirth to get Protean Hulk, and then you go through typical Protean Hulk lines. But there's like a lot of other stuff that the deck can do, and a lot of newer combos fit into the Protean Hulk package that they didn't back when Flash Hulk was a big thing. Like, mm-hmm. like the whole Kiki Snoop combo fits in Protean Hulk now because of Conspicuous Snoop and Goblin Recruiter, which I just learned the other day. But yeah, I don't know. The deck has a whole bunch of sweet tech. And so I'm fairly familiar with Protean Hulk. I played a lot with it when Flash was legal. And so I might look at something like this just so that I have at least sort of one deck in my quiver that I like know how to pilot.
Sure, sure.
Yeah. And then the rest of it, go off meta and see what I can learn.
And would you say, Jim, that your approach to this is kind of standard for what you believe some of the other players are going to do? Or do you think there's going to be kind of a mix of some players going pretty much for the decks that they're known for or that they're very familiar with only? Or do you think other players are going to just be kind of doing the same thing that you are, is take a shot here and there, maybe take one, you know, try a different particular combination of a various deck archetype? You think there's some both of those, or is it just kind of random in a way?
I don't know. There's some very good and very smart CDH players playing in this. Like the folks from Into the North, they're brilliant. They're great. They might take a look at this and pick the best decks that are available. Like they might be the ones going for the Cody Turbonaz. I don't find that particularly interesting. I don't, like, if I picked Cody Turbonaz and won on turn one with it, I'd be like, okay, now what, you know? Because it doesn't like scratch that itch that I have for winning in a way that's meaningful to me, or in a way like using cards that I like or using clever mechanics or something like that. It's just, it feels like kind of a solved deck to me. And that's not to say that that's like wrong or bad for the people that are interested in winning that way. It's just like not for me, you know? So I don't know. I think they might go for the more objectively better decks. There are a couple people that are known for specific decks that they've brewed, like Charles and Dr. Michael Levine are both known for mono white decks like Heliod. Obviously Ken, we mentioned earlier, likes playing Karkashima and Kark decks in general. So I think they might grab at least one of those decks that is kind of right in their wheelhouse, but I expect to see a lot of people kind of going all over the place. I really like the depth in the 2 and 3 color decks. So that's kind of where I'm going to be living. But I actually think that people, after grabbing a 4 or 5 color deck, a lot of people are going to be going straight to the 2-color stuff, because I think they can get what they want with higher draft picks, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think it does. Yeah, so we've gotten to talk a lot about MLC here. So how about we try to bring things back into the greater scheme of things with trying to, again, personalize CDH. And again, we as players just gravitate towards the certain decks that we really enjoy. I really like playing white for some reason. So there are a lot of interesting white cards, white synergies that you will see across a lot of my decks, more casual decks, and as well, and that's kind of crept into my CDH decks as well, whereas two of the three decks I'm currently running run white for this reason. And I think that a second way to look at personalization here, Jim, is to kind of look at the card choices that you're putting in certain decks. Obviously, we've talked a lot about here about the different archetypes, but how much room do you think there is for, again, kind of running more pet cards or pet strategies in CDH if you want to take an existing archetype and tweak it a little bit to meet more the expectations you want to get out of a game of CDH?
Yeah. I think that there's a lot of room for brewing, but it kind of requires a good understanding of what you expect to come up against. That is, I think, one of the biggest reasons why the decklist database is a good thing. I think it's a bad thing in some ways, but I think that is like one of its biggest pros, is that it gives you an accurate concept of what you expect to come up against when you sit down at a table and you say, I want to play CDH, and everybody else pulls out CDH decks. When you go through the decklist database, it gives you an accurate concept. So one of the problems with brewing off meta or personalizing is if you don't have a good concept of what you're going to come up against, you are just going to get crushed. It's going to create a bad situation for not only yourself, but the other people at the table too, because the other people at the table don't want to feel like they've created a power level mismatch. So when you walk up and you say, I want to play CDH, and you've got, I don't know, a mono white, like what's the unicorn? Lathiel?
Lathiel.
Emiel.
Emiel. Right?
Yeah. Like Emiel's got some throws. It's got some reach, like not actual factual reach, but it's got some like potential. But if you construct your deck without thinking, I need to be able to answer things on turn two, you've got a problem, right? Like if you're building it around rule of law, great. If you're building it around something else, like monk tokens that you're making off of the original Heliod and Sarah Sanctum, right? It's just too slow. You're going to get blown out before you ever set up your engine, and that's going to be the end of it. So I think there's a lot of room to personalize, but it requires a really good base level of understanding first.
Okay. And again, this is the same kind of issue I've run into a lot in my own homebrew deck. I won't go into that too much because I feel like it's more of like a fringy type thing. So again, I'm not going to be running it against the majority of CDH decks. I'll be running against, you know, someone trying something, building something new, other new players, et cetera, because I wanted the challenge personally of trying to build up to the meta or closer to the meta myself. So it was an opportunity to try that out. But yes, that deck against the ones from the database that I proxied up and that I will play when I play CDH, it really doesn't hold a candle to those for obvious reasons, because the combos aren't as tight. The deck just isn't as tuned. Hopefully it will get there with time. But yes, I came at it from a slightly different perspective. It's not as good, with the idea being that over time I will learn, I will try to figure out what works, what doesn't work, and make those changes. So it's an interesting living project, but definitely a way for me to bring some personalization into that particular deck versus, again, now that I've played Godo half a dozen times and I kind of understand how the deck works, I've had a chance to play it against other decks, you know, do my opening hands, make serious mulliganing problems, bad decisions on opening hands, et cetera, et cetera. I'm starting to see now that there are maybe some cards in this stock list that I pull from the deck database maybe don't necessarily work for every situation that I'm seeing. So maybe that right there is an opportunity for me in the future to personalize a couple things, take a couple cards out, put a couple different cards in, try that out. Obviously, this is a very living format. We want to try to keep the deck together as much as possible, but with that being said, there's always room for improvement, especially if you're going into a new meta. et cetera, et cetera, where maybe some of the cards don't hold up. So having the ability to personalize and being flexible to personalize your decks is not a bad thing in CDH. I'm coming around to definitely going off script once in a while, as long as you're not really completely messing with the concept of the deck and exactly what it's trying to do. Maybe a couple of card changes here and there are actually quite healthy versus just running the stock list as basically the end-all be-all of that particular deck.
Well, I would actually go so far as to say that the decklist database decks are not, like, they're not pre-cons, right? Like, they're not, like, intended to play card for card for a couple reasons. First of all, a lot of them are brewed with the intent to play against the online meta, and that might not be what you're playing against. So one of the things about about CDH in paper, when you're talking about like non-proxied paper metas, like if you have a playgroup at your LGS that plays CDH with real cards at Wednesday Night Commander, right?
Mm-hmm.
When a deck comes out, like there was a little while where Tazri was the best food chain commander, and then the new Niv-Mizzet came out, and Niv-Mizzet was the best food chain commander for like a minute, and then the First Sliver came out in Modern Horizons, and then First Sliver was the best food chain commander. So there was a period of time there where they're like, it was all up in the air, and the Tazri commander players were still playing Tazri at your LGS, right? But the meta online, where people proxy a lot more frequently and tend to update their lists much faster because they're much more invested, they might have all moved to the First Sliver, right? So the decks that are playing against the First Sliver frequently are now teching against the First Sliver and not General Tazri. So if you were to pick up a deck on the database that was tuned to play against the First Sliver, you know, yeah, it's tuned to play against food chain, but not the food chain that is sitting across from you at your LGS, right? So again, it kind of has to do with understanding the meta. It's very, very important to understand the meta, to understand why the deck builder chose the cards that they chose, because they might be assuming that you're playing against something that you're not actually playing against. These decks are not just like jack of all trades kind of decks. They're not intended to play well against everything. And I think that one of the best ways to discover what they're intended to play against is by reading the primers. Like one of the best ways that you can customize a deck is read the primer, get into the head of the person that built it, and read about their card choices and say, you know, hey, I included, you know, a couple pyroclasms because we're, you know, really creature heavy meta, and I just need to sweep things every once in a while. And you're like, okay, well, I'm not playing into a creature heavy meta, so I can swap those pyroclasms for something else and strengthen my deck against something that I actually am going to play against. So that is definitely one way that you can do that. But I would definitely recommend reading the primers before you make any changes.
Sure. And I did, for the record, I did read the primer before I got into the deck. I just learned some things about the deck and exactly how it seemed to operate when actually playing, and finding just cards that were dead in my hand more often than I wanted them to be. And I didn't want them to be dead. So all of a sudden, I'm making the same kind of card choices that I would in more casual circles, but obviously I'm trying to find more of a one-for-one trade that'll still really fit the theme of the deck versus maybe in casual where I'm willing to say, I don't need to necessarily make a one-for-one change here. I could just put in something completely silly and it would still be fun for that bit. So,
oh yeah.
Yeah.
Or yeah, and I mean, the funny thing is too, is a lot of the time people kind of hold the decklist database decks up on a pedestal as though they're the, you know, platonic ideal for whatever commander, but they're just as likely to have cards that people just like, you know? Like one of the cards that shows up, or at least showed up at one point in a lot of decklist database decks, was Recurring Insight. And a lot of those inclusions of Recurring Insight were just because a couple influential people really liked the card. It's not necessarily the best thing that you could be playing. It's more so that somebody who was very influential and very charismatic and very prolific in deck building happens to put that in a lot of their decks, and it just gets adopted by people that, you know, copy the deck one for one. Not saying that Recurring Insight is not a good card, but it's definitely, its popularity is driven by the popularity of the people that like it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's definitely fair. I mean, obviously, who would have thought the creators like us are actually pushing the meta in certain ways? It's crazy, right?
Uh-huh. Vidalcan Orrery. Yeah. So, yeah, like I don't know. The other thing about the decklist database is when you look at it, you see a lot of decks that you look at them and you're like, well, why is that there? You know? If I were to sit down with this deck at a table full of Cody Turbonauts, I'm gonna get blown out of the water. And the reason why it's there is because people like playing it. There's like a few decks that are even decently popular that people play just because they enjoy the way it plays. They like, you know, casting a bunch of spells, like non-deterministic storm decks. Like it's more reliable to just win with a combo, like a deterministic combo, but a lot of people like the act of sequencing their spells and, you know, trying to be clever and assemble the bridge that you're walking on while you're walking on it, you know? Yeah, I don't know. I think that this kind of ties back into what we were talking about earlier, which is if winning was the only motivation, if people didn't care about how they won, then the decklist database would look a whole lot different, and what the decks that you play against would look a lot different.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there's definitely a lot of different kinds of decks and different archetypes on the database. And that obviously allows you to play a whole bunch of different types of archetypes, different kinds of decks. I mean, I had Adam on here from Casually Competitive a while back talking just about stacks for an hour. And just, I haven't really ever played a stacks deck before. So, I mean, the deck database is a great place for me to look for a stacksy type deck and try to figure out, is this for me? Is this not for me? Just look at the primers, see if there's some sort of seed in there that I really want to take a chance on, and then go for it. But again, you don't have to. There's so many different ways to play in CDH. And again, I think that's another thing of what new players like myself to the format kind of trip up over when we're first getting in is there's more than just two or three different viable things in CDH. It's still a very vibrant meta. There's still a lot of different things you can do. If I mean, if you want to maybe boil it down, there's probably three or four main archetypes, but in which maybe is obviously a lot less than you see in more casual games, obviously. But you still have a whole bunch of different strategies, different ways to get there. Maybe you have a bunch of different ad nauseam decks, but maybe only some of them are actually trying to run that turbo. Maybe some of them are using that as a backup card draw. Like in my homebrew deck, I may or may not run ad nauseam as a backup way to draw cards when I'm desperate. So again, there's multiple different breach lines where that's your main thing you're trying to do, or maybe breach is your second, third, fourth line win condition, or it's just in there for value. As I was talking with Ryan about in Godo, is it's value too, and just so many different ways that certain cards can just kind of go into different decks, but are you're not necessarily playing the same deck over and over again in a different shell. Every deck has its own strengths and weaknesses. And again, there's just so many cool different decks that are just out there. It's really amazing when you get into it, just the diversity of decks, the diversity of commanders that are really out there when you really kind of go beyond the database and you just see what people are playing out there.
Yeah, and like that's why when people ask me about what CDH is, rather than saying, you know, it's the practice of optimizing a deck to the, you know, fifth decimal place of optimization, I don't actually think that's the way it is. I think that CDH is more so the exploration of what's possible in the format, you know? And there's a bunch of ways that you can explore what's possible in the format, but in this particular aspect of exploration, you're exploring, you know, harder, better, faster, stronger kind of thing, you know? There's ways that you can explore the format where you're like, oh, can I tell a story with my cards? Or, you know, can I make a deck where all of the cards start with the same letter or something like that? Like, I've got decks that are based on different numbers. I've got a deck that's based on the number zero that plays like 40 zero drops. I've got a deck based on the number seven where all of the power and toughness of all the creatures add up to seven. So, like, there's a bunch of different ways that you can explore the format. CDH is one of those ways that you can explore. But it's kind of the act of exploring how fast you can go, how resilient can you be, you know, how far can you push a strategy. And I think that when you do that with a good faith, you know, with a way of engaging with what you reasonably expect, like there's an aspect of it where you kind of have to go in with eyes open, knowing what you're going to come up against. So when you go into a game, knowing what the best things that you can do in the format are and engage with that in a good faith way, saying, I think that this is one of the things that can hang with the best things in the format, but I'm exploring what's possible. I think that's what CDH is. And I think that captures a lot of the motivations of a lot of people that play Commander this way that kind of aren't captured by just saying, this is the fastest, these are the fastest, best decks in the format. We only care about winning.
Yeah, definitely a lot of different decks out there to try, a lot of interesting strategies to try, and people are coming up with new decks all the time. I mean, that's why the database is never static. There's new decks being added every so often because there are just so many cool things being devised that's, maybe weren't quite there before, but maybe a new card has come out or just a new strategy, new kind of archetype that someone just hadn't thought of before, and finally it gets its due on the database. So just a lot of really cool things to check out for there. And anyway, do you have any other thoughts, Jim, before we end today's episode, just on, tips on personalizing CDH or just, kind of reevaluating or evaluating your own motivations for playing CDH?
Yeah, I would probably close things out by saying, like, don't look at the database as a rubber stamp on what's competitive, right? Don't let them tell you what is competitive. I think it's a good benchmark to say the stuff on the database is stuff that you would reasonably expect to have to play against if you tell somebody you want to play CDH. That's a really good snapshot of what CDH might look like today on average. But just because something's not there doesn't mean it's not CDH. And just because something is there doesn't mean it is CDH. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's kind of hard to understand until you really dig into it, but I definitely see where you're going with this. And I know I'll learn this more as I keep playing and get more games, get more experience, and really start to differentiate the difference.
But yeah, in the meantime, it's super fun to just like see what people do and ask people about their decks. If there's one thing that every Commander player on the planet loves, it's telling you about their deck. So if you want to get a good sense of it,
Yeah, definitely ask questions about the deck, especially in combo lines. I think right now that's one of the big problems I have in trying to understand things with CDH is combo lines can be very, very complicated. And just having someone walk through their win instead of just shuffling up is definitely something I'm trying to do better at because I want to understand exactly what they're doing because maybe some point down the road I will see a combo coming and maybe if I have removal in my hand, do something about it, run that counter spell, run a kill spell, hit something with a braid if I need to take it out of the way. Just something to prevent that player from going off. It's just, it all ends up being experience. You've seen something before, you understand how the combo works. You just understand how the deck archetype works.
For
And
sure.
yeah, just over time you start really learning exactly what that deck is trying to do. And
Well,
you just get better at it.
I think that's one way where CDH kind of almost resembles the rest of Commander more than it resembles, tournament-oriented formats, where when somebody's winning, like you might have it, like say if I'm trying to storm off with like a Ruth or something like that, right? I might have somebody at the table tracking my storm count for me, and another person at the table tracking my floating mana, and another person at the table tracking something else or whatever, just so that I can concentrate on what I'm doing. It kind of takes some of that cognitive load off of me. Whereas like my opponent at a GP would never count storm for me.
Sure.
Like they'll tell me if I screw up for sure, or they'll call a judge if I screw up for sure, but they're not going to help me beat them. And I think you actually frequently see that at CDH tables where people will kind of like crowdsource talking through your win condition. And I think that's another indication that you can point to say, like, winning is not the only thing that these people care about. Because if it was, they would just shut up. They'd put their sunglasses on, they'd put their headphones in, like you're at the World Series of Poker, and you just let people screw up. But they care about how they win. They want their opponent to be fully informed and then beat them. It's like a more pure test of skill. If you do that that way, you know what I mean? It's a very different motivation, I think.
Yeah, and I've definitely learned a lot more about that just even from the games with other creators that I've been on is trying to understand again, adding the entertainment value on top of the gameplay. And that right there just I think adds another element that you're probably not going to even get your LGS or just in a random online game is you start adding layers upon layers upon layers, and you're still playing the same game, but there's just so many different pieces of complexity, so many different social interactions that just get involved in that sort of interaction. So it's a lot to think about when you're getting in there, but it gets easier with time, I'd say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's complex. It's definitely worth exploring, 100%. If anybody is out there thinking, maybe I want to try it, definitely try it. It's actually really fun.
All right, Jim, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me about this today. It's been really interesting hearing more about the MLC, hearing about exactly what goes into that. Good luck in the upcoming season here. And just, you know, in general, talking with me about the personalization of CDH has been interesting, having you on, hearing your thoughts about this.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Real fun.
No problem. And before I let you go, again, where can people find your content with the Spike Feeders?
Yeah, you can find us on YouTube at the Spike Feeders or Spike Feeders Fab if you're into Flesh and Blood. You can also find us on Twitch. We do stream occasionally on Twitch, although that's more variety type streaming. Like I stream Legend of Zelda games, Jerry streams Farming Simulator. It's kind of all over the place on Twitch. Or you can reach us on Twitter at the Spike Feeders for the whole group or at JimTSF for me in particular.
All right, sounds good. And if you're interested in hearing any of the episodes I've mentioned on today's podcast, the CDH episodes, or just any of the general episodes on the MTG and Quarantine podcast, you can find those on the usual podcast outlets. That is your Google, Apple, Spotify, Player FM, Rocket Cast, Pocket Casts, and a million others. I always forget them. But if it's a major podcast outlet, you can probably find my podcast on there. You can also find me on Twitter at MTGInQuarantine. If you see the happy-looking Ulamog wearing a pair of headphones, you found the right place. I'd also like to utilize this opportunity again to give another huge shout-out and thank you to all the awesome people who have supported me over at patreon.com/MTGInQuarantine. So another thank you to Mr. Big Benz, Anomaly, Draco Lucian, Neo Royal, Nick S., Infamous Fridge, Frugal Brutal, and Jen of the Filthy MTG Casuals for supporting the show. If you'd like to help support the show and help me make more awesome content, head on over to patreon.com/MTGInQuarantine for more information. And I hope you enjoyed listening to this episode of the MTG in Quarantine podcast. My name's MJ. Have a great rest of your day, everybody.